Now, once upon a time, you'd turn on the radio in the morning and you'd find a station that sounded a bit like this.
Nice to have you around.
Oh, maybe this.
Century 105. What can we say at this ridiculous hour to make you get up and want to jump in the shower? What can we do?
In fact, there used to be hundreds of commercial radio stations around the country, but over the years they disappeared. Media conglomerates have been buying them up, and yesterday the UK's largest operator announced that over 40 of its local stations will now get the same programmes, all coming out of a studio in London. So, is this the beginning of the end for local commercial radio? That's one of the questions for today's show, but it's certainly not the only one. Jill Hind is here. Jill is the Chief Operating Officer of the media consultancy Enders Analysis. Before that, she had a long career at radio and TV companies. Jill, I want to ask you about another big media story that's around today, which is the BBC. But let's move on to the issue of commercial radio, the question that I posed at the top of the show. Is this the end of local commercial radio? Yesterday, the UK's largest commercial radio company announced that its stations are going to be getting a national breakfast show, not unique local ones. You'll hear either Capital, Heart or Smooth. Their owner, Global, says that by doing this, they'll be creating the three largest commercial radio breakfast shows in the UK. Hundreds of local DJs and producers now face an uncertain future. Global is closing studios completely in towns like Brighton and Cambridge. We did invite Global to join us today, but they declined. Phil Riley was the chief executive of Chrysalis Radio, which Global bought in 2007 in a deal that he managed and oversaw. Phil joins us now. Thanks for doing so, Phil. What's Hi. The business case to what Global have announced?
Well, the business case I'll come to. If I can just, though, say a very quick word about the staff that are being made redundant. It's probably the biggest single round of redundancies in the radio industry for a decade in the commercial industry, and there are many people hurting today, I think, and as you say, very uncertain about their future. So I think the whole of commercial radio is, you know, wants those people to come through this and make a career for themselves going forward.
So, indeed. What are the sort of messages that you're getting from colleagues?
An awful lot of people are very upset. Many of them will have been on some of these radio stations for 15, 20, 25 years. And so, in fact, there are people, I mean, I launched Heart back in 1994, and there are people that I brought on in the very early years who are still there, who obviously recognise that they won't have a job in 3 months or 6 months. So it's very, very tough for those people.
Indeed it is. Let's talk about why it's happened, Phil.
Yeah, well, the business case, I think, is compelling from Global's perspective, and we may come on and talk about Bauer. The business case for Global is that they're under massive pressure from other radio services, particularly now that DAB has become pretty well entrenched in the UK and new services can launch on DAB. And I've no doubt you talked very recently about the new Virgin service with Chris Evans being a nascent threat. You also have then the music streaming services such as Spotify that are eating into people's listening time. The rise of podcasting as well means that more and more people are finding other ways to consume audio content. So radio stations and radio groups really have to be as efficient as they can in order to, you know, maintain their ability to deliver programs.
So a huge influx of competition. But the thing that I think a lot of people, and perhaps some of the staff who are going through such enormous pain and who are contacting you today, are thinking about is that individually a lot of these stations are profitable.
Yeah.
So why is it that profitable? It's a bit like when we announced recently that we talked about the fact that some media publications like BuzzFeed and so on were laying off staff, even though some revenues in some cases are up. Why would it be the case that profitable organisations are announcing these layoffs? Why can't the status quo continue?
Well, because the status quo can never continue. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, when I sold the Chrysalis radio stations to Global, we didn't have Facebook, we didn't have Spotify, we didn't have, I mean, broadband was only just beginning to be a part of the mix. And you can't just stand still and not recognise that new media, new ways of delivering information, entertainment and commercial opportunities to people are emerging all the time. So you, as any media operator, has got to look at how they run their business and say, is there a way to do this differently, better, more effectively, more efficiently. So they would be failing in their duty if they didn't do that. But at the same time, with any change like this, there's going to be obvious, you know, human casualty.
Indeed. Jill Hine from Ender's Analysis is still here. Jill, do you agree with that analysis of why Global is doing this now? Why is this happening now?
Absolutely agree with Phil's analysis. I think we need to take a step back and actually say why, particularly today or yesterday, did they make this announcement? And that's really down to sort of the regulation. Ofcom has statutory duties to ensure that each radio licensee must adhere to what it's called its format. And those formats dictate the type of music it can play and also the amount of local news and localness that each station
has. About being distinctive, isn't it?
About being distinctive. Now, these formats have been simplified over time because they were very, very strict. Back in 2010, Ofcom allowed certain stations in what they allowed something called approved areas, and there were 31 of these approved areas around the UK. And within those approved areas, you could actually share programming with a station under the same stable. That allowed companies such as Global to actually sort of merge stations and lose some sort of studio premises. Now, what happened back in October late last year, Ofcom revised those guidelines quite significantly. And they've taken those number of approved areas from 31 down to just basically mirroring the ITV region. So it's about sort of 13 or 14 of these regions. And on top of that, they also allowed the amount of locally made programming to go down from either 10 hours to 6 per day or from 7 hours to 3 hours, depending on the amount of local news that each of those stations actually delivered. What this means when you put both of those together, plus the fact that they said that you did not have to do a locally produced breakfast show, this has opened the door for Global to turn around and say, we are going to make three networked breakfast shows, one for Heart, one for Capital and one for Smooth. And in the case of Heart, you're taking down from what is existing 22 local breakfast shows. We're taking that down just to one, which no doubt will be produced out of London.
But to take a prior step, why did Ofcom make those changes?
Well, it's all about localness, and localness is derived in many different ways. Obviously, the provision of local news, it could be local information, whether it's weather, whether it's travel, and it's also having sort of a local feel or local presenters. And still, each station still has to have a certain amount of local program or locally produced programming, so from within that approved area but wider approved area. But Ofcom has taken the decision that this localness can actually be fed through technology. For many years now, it's been possible to feed local weather, local news, local travel straight through from a studio outside the actual where that license is supposedly broadcast from.
But you buy that? I mean, I think in the reporting that we've done for this show, the people that we've spoken to, it's obvious that people, I hate to use the word audiences in the cliched way, but they have such a strong connection with local DJs. That's because there's a human being who they might happen to know or see locally who is speaking to them through a microphone.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the benefits of radio. It doesn't need to just be a local DJ. It's actually about the presenter itself. And you're right, one of the reasons that it's been so strong for many years and why it's withheld much better than television has its audience is people have a local have a connection to that presenter. Having said which, there's been a lot of research that says actually what people are after is they're after the music first and the presenter, and actually how the localness is arrived is irrelevant.
Oh dear. Okay, Phil, I've been sent a message on Twitter by Paul Chantler, who's pointing me to an analogy by Kerry Jones, a former BBC Radio Northampton presenter, who likens... He likens the local radio market to the pub trade, how it's gone from individual village pubs to major chain Wetherspoons with, and I quote, just a few sepia pics of the town and the wall to give a nod to locality. Is that fair?
Well, I think there's always a way of looking at any change and being critical of it. But I think those people who are tasked with running the organisations that they manage are going to take the decisions that the financial imperative makes them. And that's not just about making profits for this year. It's about protecting the business for the future. So
you can see what Paul, forgive me, but you can see what Paul and Kerry are getting at, can't you? The idea of an individual village pub, which has something which is sacrosanct about it, a personal, emotional connection, something you're morally invested in, to a major chain. And Wetherspoons, you know, is a lot of things, but it's not your local.
Well, I think the people that go down Wetherspoons to drink their pint might think differently. I think if Wetherspoons is offering a cheaper pint because it's can buy more beer at a better economy of scale, they might appreciate that.
So do you anticipate other groups following? I mean, to extend the analogy, do you think more groups will do this?
Well, I think it's the big issue for Bauer. So Bauer, who are very similar in size to Global, they cover many of the same markets, they now have a big decision to make. Do they follow global and become more national and strip out a lot of their local programming, particularly at breakfast? Or do they double down outside London in particular on their localness? And there is an argument to say that if global in this move to big national brands with national breakfast shows scoop more national advertising, at the end of the day you can only squeeze so many commercials into an hour of programming, and if more of those are national, then it means there's less space for local ads on those transmitters that global own.
Forgive me for interrupting, but you think that now that they might carry a national breakfast show, do you think that they will still carry local advertising and news or not?
They will try, and certainly there's no indication that they're going to give up selling local advertising or let go their local sales staff. But I think if the impetus is to bring in more big national sponsors and national brands as part of a bigger, glitzier breakfast show, you may very well see local clients move to the edge, at which point a canny local operator, and Bauer certainly have lots of clever operators for their local stations, may say, well, actually, here's an opportunity for us to go to those local clients who are being squeezed out and maybe make a bigger play for them. So maybe there is still an opportunity for a local national hybrid mix at the regional level.
Okay, so we're saying that Sky and Virgin have announced a big sort of partnership recently, haven't they, around the Chris Evans show. Jill Hind, if Global is going to save lots of cash doing this, are they going to put it back into programming? Can we see more presenters being poached from the BBC and elsewhere?
I would love to say they'd be putting it back into programming. I'm not 100% convinced they will be. I think we will see a few more presenters being pinched, but not just as a result of this ability to do that. This has been happening for the last few months. We've seen Simon Mayo's going over to Bauer. We've obviously seen Chris Evans go. I would imagine we're likely to see a few more presenters leave the BBC.
Okay, and we've had people here from community radio stations in recent weeks, Jill. Is there a case for loosening the constraints around community radio stations, allowing them to operate more like commercial operators?
I'm sure the community stations would argue that, but I think you have to look at that area by area, because a lot of these community stations are actually based in the same broadcasting to the same people as very small local radio stations, which aren't affected by Global and Bauer. And it's those stations actually that are crying out now, saying we're losing money to this community stations anyway. So I don't think that's the answer.
Okay, Phil, very, very briefly, does this offer an opportunity to the BBC?
Well, I think BBC Local Radio has got to find its way, and it's been struggling for a while. Here is a great opportunity for BBC Local Radio to try and reclaim its premier position as the provider of local news, information and entertainment. And particularly, there are now plenty of presenters who've cut their teeth on music radio, who are well known in local markets, who may very well find that their talent could be deployed by BBC Local Radio.
Indeed. Phil, forgive me for interrupting. We've got to leave it there. That's it for today. My thanks to all our guests who've joined us from around the UK. Steve Carson of BBC Scotland, Bobby Hayne of STV in Glasgow, Leslie Riddick in Edinburgh, Phil Riley on the line from Warwickshire, and Jill Hind here in the studio.